found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. Start your workday off right with the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show. We're heard here live on Channel 2, LA Talk Radio, Monday through Friday at 9 o'clock Pacific. And then later in the day, we post the podcast on the MariaSanchezShow.com, which is our blog, and MariaSanchezShow.com, which is our website, and of course, LATalkRadio.com, Channel 2. Thank you so much for joining us. It's Monday, July 8th. Hope you had a fabulous weekend. I'm sure many of you had a long weekend. We were on the air on Friday morning and happy and proud to be able to be so. So thank you. If you miss our programs, please feel free to go and download as you see fit. We do have an eclectic program. Later on this hour, we have a physician visiting with us talking about 25% of us in the United States has a fatty liver, and they're saying there's no medical therapy, with liver transplant as the only alternative, and it's representing a silent epidemic. He's going to be speaking with us because if you have a fatty liver, 5% will have hepatitis due to that fact, and of that, a third will develop severe scarring of the liver, which is known as fibrosis or cirrhosis, which is irreversible. So he's going to be speaking with us about that. And then we also have Kat Merrick, who is totally live VC. She's got a field to fork or farm to table dinner that she's hosting next week, and we wanted to help promote that as well. If you have a cause that you would like us to get behind, please let us know. You go to the website, you can see my contact information. I prefer emails because that helps me schedule the program with the calendar in front of me, but we're always willing to listen and to help promote good causes. We try and make as much good radio as possible, as in good news radio. So, of course, the crash of the Asiana plane at the San Francisco International Airport on Saturday is still in the news. This morning, the National Transportation Chairwoman, Deborah Herzman, spoke that she said the plane was well below the target speed of 137 knots. It wasn't just give or take a few knots, she said. They were very slow in this. The plane's cockpit voice recorder and flight data recorder indicated that there were no signs of problems until 7 seconds before the impact. The name of the pilot that was at the wheel was the second most junior pilot of the Ford 4 on board the Asiana Airlines plane. He had just 43 hours of experience flying the 777, and it was his first attempt to land at the San Francisco Airport, although he had flown there 29 times previously on other types of aircraft. This is according to the South Korean Transport Ministry official. He's in his mid-40s. He has almost 10,000 hours flying. His name, they're saying this is his anglicized name, released for the first time this morning, is Lee Kang Kuk. And it differs slightly from earlier reports. There, on the plane, there were 141 Chinese, 77 South Koreans, 64 Americans, 3 Indians, 3 Canadians, 1 French, 1 Vietnamese, and 1 Japanese citizen. They said mechanical failure did not appear to be a factor. So video that has been reviewed says the plane came in too low, lifted its nose in an attempt to gain altitude, and then bounced violently along the tarmac after the rear of the plane clipped the seawall, which is in the approach to the runway. More than 30 people remain hospitalized as of late last night. 8 were listed in critical condition, including 2 with paralysis from spinal injuries. There are 2 dead. They were the young girls from China. They were among a group of 30 students and 5 teachers from the school on their way to attend a summer camp in the United States. 12 parents, including those of the 2 that were declared dead, were scheduled to leave for San Francisco this morning. The other students in the group are going to be going back to China because the rest of the trip has now been canceled. And this report is coming in, sadly. It appears that an emergency vehicle rushing to the scene of the crash may have run over one of the two teenage Chinese girls killed in the incident. The San Francisco Medical Examiner is conducting an autopsy. And they're saying one of the deceased did have injuries consistent with those of having been run over by a vehicle. Many agencies were on the field yesterday. And according to San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee, a total of 225 first responders were involved. So our hearts go out to all of those and the tragedy that that unfolded. And, of course, we'll keep you posted as more information becomes available. Edward Snowden, still in the news, he's the NSA leaker, has maybe three options available to him in the world to seek asylum. Venezuela says it has extended an offer of asylum to Snowden, but hasn't heard back from him. Venezuela is one of the three left-leaning Latin American nations that have offered help. The others are Bolivia, which has offered asylum, and Nicaragua, which said it would consider it. And over the weekend, the American politicians went on the front to say that if you offer him political asylum, you are taking a step against the United States, and they are warning them to consider what's at stake should they grant Snowden asylum. So the Latin American countries are the first to respond in a positive way. Bolivian president, as you recall last week, Evo Morales, his plane was denied permission to enter the airspace of several European countries, they being Portugal, Italy, France, and Spain, because there was a rumor that Snowden was on his plane. So they made an emergency landing in Vienna, Austria, and then authorities searched the plane and confirmed that he was not part of that. So Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega said he would grant Snowden asylum in his country if the circumstances permit. And the asylum offers could allow him a chance to evade the United States and the prosecution, but they have to get him to their country, and they're saying they don't know how they're going to do that. So talk about cloak and dagger and espionage. And again, I can't imagine what the stress must be like knowing that you've got the United States not rooting for you. So in another international story, for those of you who followed Nigella Lawson, the 53-year-old television cooking show manner and her line of cookbooks, and they say she presents in a flirtatious manner, and that caught my eye because I was told that I was behaving inappropriately flirtatious at a 4th of July party, and I don't know what's inappropriately flirtatious. What I think about inappropriately flirtatious is a woman overtly either showing you her cleavage or flipping her hair or licking her lips or shimmying or sidling up to you. That's, to me, is flirtatious. I don't know what you guys would consider your behavior as flirtatious. So I called a couple of my girlfriends. I said, so this is what Mr. Wonderful says that I was, and then inappropriately flirtatious with a young man who's old enough to be my son, which makes my stomach turn. Like, really? No, thank you. And they're like, no, Maria, you were just being you. That's who you are. You're outgoing. You're friendly. You're engaging to men and women. So Nigella Lawson's multimillionaire art collector husband, Charles Saatchi, said yesterday that he's going to divorce her, and he did it via a newspaper article. So it was published yesterday in the Mail. He said, I feel that I have clearly been a disappointment to Nigella during the last year or so. I am disappointed that she was advised to make no public comment to explain that I abhor violence of any kind against women and have never abused her physically in any way. And if you didn't know what the story is about, last month a newspaper published photographs of him with his hand around her neck with her in tears while they were having dinner in London's Mayfair neighborhood. So he said that it was a playful tiff. She moved out of the family home soon afterwards and has not made a public comment on the incident. She married Saatchi in 2003 after her first husband, journalist John Diamond, died of throat cancer, and she has two teenage children from her first marriage. And this is something I didn't know. Saatchi ran the world's largest advertising agency, Saatchi and Saatchi, with his brother in the 1980s. And then finally, before we get to our guest, Dr. Peter Traber, a local story here in the United States. Teresa Hines Carey, who is the wife of the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, was rushed to the hospital yesterday and was flown to Massachusetts General Hospital last night after being stabilized by doctors at the Nantucket Cottage Hospital. She's 74 years old. She was admitted to the emergency room in critical condition and has remained that way until last night. So we don't have any reports this morning about her condition. And, of course, she's the widow of former U.S. Senator John Hines, who is heir to the Hines ketchup fortune. She married John Kerry in 1995. We've got other news that we'll share later this hour, but now we're going to connect with Dr. Peter Traber. He's an expert on liver disease. He's the CEO, CMO, and president of Gallatech and Therapeutics Incorporated. He's going to visit with us about fatty livers.
This is Dr. Peter Traber.
Hi, Dr. Traber. It's Maria Sanchez. You're live on the Maria Sanchez Show. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and I guess it's good afternoon to you.
Yes, it's good afternoon here, just good afternoon, but Maria, it's great to be with you.
Thank you so much, and before we get into what your company is doing about this, share with us, what is fatty liver, and how do we know if we have it? Are there signs, and what does it mean if we have it?
Yeah, good questions. You know, fatty liver disease is the most common liver disorder in the United States. It's really a silent epidemic because few people know about it, and those that do know about it don't know exactly what they can do about it. Fatty liver occurs when you get an accumulation of fat in liver cells, which then progresses to a chronic inflammation or a hepatitis in those in the liver. And as a result of that inflammation, you get scarring or fibrosis in the liver, which then eventually becomes severe scarring or cirrhosis. And this cirrhosis can lead to many complications, bleeding, swelling, infections, and can lead to death. One of the most difficult things about this disorder is that there are few, if any, symptoms until rather late in the disease when you have fibrosis. So one can live many years with fatty liver and inflammation of the liver and not really have any symptoms and not know about it until they get scarring and complications.
Are there routine screenings or blood tests?
Yeah, the way it usually comes to one's attention is during a routine physical examination. Your physician often orders routine laboratories, and a couple of the laboratories in that routine are liver-related enzymes. These liver-related enzymes may be elevated. They're not always elevated in fatty liver disease, but many times they are. And then your doctor, that will give him a hint, and he'll go on to do, he or she will go on to do an imaging test, such as an ultrasound or a CT or an MRI, and identify that you have fatty liver. Now, the gold standard for defining whether you have advanced disease or fibrosis is a liver biopsy, which would be done after an imaging test. So usually it comes to people's attention either when they start having complications or on a routine physical where your physician identifies some elevated enzymes.
So, Dr. Traber, if you don't ask for that test, but you do have regular routine, let's say annual physicals, would that be something that would be checked off for the blood test results, or do you have to request that?
It's usually a routine test on most physicals. So most people will get these liver enzymes in their routine physical.
And what is that test? Does it have a...
They're called AST and ALT, or aspartate aminotransferase and alanine aminotransferase. And they're on the standard chemistry panel that most doctors get with a physical. And now some doctors may see a little bit of elevation and not, you know, click to that, and others will, you know, say, hey, you might have something here and go further. Now, the reason why this is such a big challenge for the country is that it's associated with obesity and diabetes. And as you know, obesity and diabetes are just growing at tremendous rates in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, as many as 25% of people have fatty liver, and about 5% of all Americans have the inflammatory fatty liver, of which a third of those will go on to develop advanced fibrosis. So we're talking about huge numbers of people, 12 to 15 million adults with the inflammatory fatty liver, and as many as 4 million going on to developing cirrhosis. So it's by far a bigger health problem than hepatitis C or hepatitis B or any other liver disease.
So I'm always looking for the good news. And the good news, it seems to me, is before we get into what your company is going to be able to do about this, obesity and diabetes are somewhat under our control and or management or reversal. So if somebody gets a grip on either of those things or both of them, does that help reduce their risk and or reduce the process of fatty liver?
Yes, Maria, that's an extremely important point. I mean, prevention is the overall best approach from a society standpoint. If one can reduce their weight, improve their, avoid development of diabetes, eat right, exercise, and so forth, you can reduce your risk of developing fatty liver. Once it progresses to the fibrosis stage, those things don't work. But in the early stages, that prevention is very important. And it's highlighted by the increase in the pediatric population.
Mm-hmm.
Adolescence, it's growing dramatically in adolescence because of the overweight problems there, so that 80% of obese children have fatty liver.
Oh, my goodness.
And there are teenagers with fibrosis and cirrhosis. So this used to be a disease when it was first identified a number of decades ago. It used to be a disease of people, in their sixth and seventh decades of life. But now it's moved much earlier and it's now affecting teenagers. So we're going to have, groups of 20-year-olds with fibrosis, and their only, their only opportunity for therapy would be a liver transplantation.
Now, I've always associated cirrhosis with chronic drinking or alcoholism.
Yes. The liver gets scarring and cirrhosis from a number of different things. Alcohol abuse is one of them. Hepatitis virus infection is another one. And fatty liver disease is another one. So the liver responds to chronic damage with scarring, which eventually gives you severe scarring or cirrhosis. So yes, in fact, the technical name for fatty liver disease is non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, which is abbreviated as NASH. And it looks very similar in a lot of respects to alcoholic hepatitis, but it occurs in people who drink little or no alcohol.
Okay. So now that we've identified what the situation is, and if somebody is on their way to getting to the fibrosis or cirrhosis stage, where does your company come in?
Well, Galectin Therapeutics, which is a ticker symbol GALT, G-A-L-T, on the NASDAQ, is a company that works on inhibiting a protein in the body called Galectin 3. And it's been found that galectin 3 is critical to the development of inflammation and scarring in the liver. And we have really outstanding preclinical data that shows that in animal models with fatty liver disease, so we can make animals obese and diabetic and they get this disease, that we're able to actually reverse not just the inflammation, but establish fibrosis and cirrhosis. So that what we are targeting are those advanced patients who have fibrosis or cirrhosis, but cannot, which if you just lose weight or get on a better diet, isn't reversible. we hope that there's, you know, efforts throughout the country to reduce obesity and diabetes and reduce the incidence of this disease. But once you have fibrosis and cirrhosis, you need something to attack that. And so we have a clinical trial that we just started in patients with advanced fibrosis and NASH, where we're testing our drug now in humans.
And are you looking for more folks to join the clinical trials?
Well, right now we're in phase one, and we'll be going into phase two next year. We're talking about a couple of hundred patients that we're, you know, enrolling in these initial trials. And I just told you there are 15 million patients in the country with mm-hmm. this disorder. So, in fact, there's no shortage of patients to be involved. If anybody is interested, they can look on, soon be able to look on the clinicaltrials.gov website and identify the sites where these clinical trials are being done. But it's there are other companies that are looking at drugs that affect the early part of NASH, which is the inflammation and fat. But we're the only ones really focused on this late-stage fibrosis, which is where we think the best target is to reverse that.
And how did you get involved with the company? Galectin is your company? I know you're the CEO and the president.
I'm the CEO of this. I've been a hepatologist and in drug development for many years. I was the chief medical officer at GlaxoSmithKline. And I joined the board of this company. And then when I saw the technology and the opportunity for having a huge impact with a safe drug, in this really huge problem, I decided that I would be the CEO and try to bring this to the market.
So at the present moment, there is no medical therapy other than a liver transplant this issue.
Correct. For the advanced fibrosis and cirrhosis, there's no therapy. And there's no FDA-approved therapies for NASH, either fatty liver. There has been some evidence that vitamin E can help, and there's some evidence that weight loss and exercise can help in the early stages. But when you get to the late stages, there's nothing that's been shown to help, and there's no approved therapies. In fact, because of the increasing incidence, it is projected that fatty liver disease will become the number one reason for liver transplants in the United States.
So not only will your medication treat it, but it will actually reverse the symptoms?
Yes. If the same thing happens as we've seen in the animal models, we're able to actually reverse established cirrhosis.
And again, this is the non-alcohol, or does it matter what the cirrhosis
well,
is?
Well, it can work in other disorders. And in addition, fibrosis in other organs like lung fibrosis, kidney fibrosis. But we are focusing right now on NASH liver fibrosis. You know, when you're showing that a particular drug is going to be effective, you usually narrow it down to a particular indication initially and then expand beyond that. Now, we have chosen an indication that is of huge importance because of the numbers. But there are other indications like alcoholic liver disease or lung disease or kidney disease that this could be effective in as well. And we've actually shown that in animal models.
And Dr. Traber, I know you have to go through all the hoops that they require, the FDA does, right?
Yes.
What do you think, best case scenario, it'll be able to come to market?
Well, the key thing about drug development is it does take a while, and it's all because of safety of patients. You want to make sure that you do everything safely. Now, as we progress through development, the value of the company increases dramatically as you go from step to step, and the hope for patients increases as you go from step to step. But the when this could come to market, at the earliest 4 years to 5 years from where we sit right now.
So the huge financial investment that you make, and then you get the patent, and then you get the proprietary rights.
Yes, yep, that's correct. Yeah, we have patents on this, on the material and on its use in liver fibrosis.
And does galectin, are they involved in other things as well?
We also, in addition to the liver fibrosis program, which is large and exciting enough, galectins are also important in cancer. And we have shown that addition of our drug to cancer immunotherapies markedly enhances the effect of the immunotherapies on the cancer. The immunotherapies are using one's own immune system to fight cancer.
Mm.
And we have a clinical trial ongoing in malignant melanoma, the most deadly form of skin cancer.
And where are you in that stage?
That's a stage. That's a phase two trial, which is being done in Europe right now. Basically, what cancers do is they use galectins. Cancers express high amounts of galectins, and they use the galectins to kind of protect themselves from one's immune system. So if you inhibit the galectins, you reduce the defense system of the tumors and allow the immune system to better treat the cancer. So we're very excited about that direction as well.
Having a father who has been suffering for non-pigmented malignant melanoma for the last decade, you got my attention there.
Yeah, that's a very serious disease.
So you must feel like you're on the cutting edge of science.
Yes, I feel very excited. I mean, this is a kind of a capstone to my career because I've been in leadership positions in pharmaceutical companies and academic medicine. I was president and CEO at Baylor College of Medicine and CEO at the University of Pennsylvania. And I focused on leading this small biotech company because I'm so excited and enthusiastic about the possibilities for doing something very important for patients.
Well, thank you for taking your time. And when we post the podcast later today, we'll put the Galectin Therapeutics website on ours so that folks who are listening can link to you. And anything else you'd like to add, sir?
No, I appreciate, kind of getting the word out. It's been, as a small biotech company, we're very dependent on the public finding interest in us and seeing the important value we have to patient health. And we appreciate the exposure. And I hope that people that have listened to this will talk to their doctors about potential fatty liver and start living a lifestyle that will help prevent it.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it. Look forward to hearing about the good news.
Okay. Well, let's keep in touch. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, thank you. Dr. Peter G. Traber. He is an expert on liver disease, the CEO, the CMO, and the president of Galectin Therapeutics, Inc. And we're obviously not promoting his company per se, but the news that this is a silent epidemic, and as he says, it's affecting 12 to 15 million adults with fatty liver. So again, to reiterate, the test that you need to look at the numbers for, which I'm going to, after a broadcast, run to my lab results and see, is AST or ALT. And he says that's standard chemistry blood work panel. So to look for those numbers. Now, what is a normal number or what's a high number? That's another question, I guess, that we can ask. But at least you can have that conversation with your healthcare provider. So fatty liver disease in the news. And before we get with our next guest, Kath Merrick, who has got one of the reasons that we like to promote some events that are going on, not only locally, but nationally, is that you might have an idea, and we all do, and then it just sits there and don't do anything about it, and it may come and go, or somebody else may pick it up. And so we try to empower you to act upon things. It might be something that's essential to the well-being of mankind or humanity, or it might be an idea that's novel and maybe there's a story in it in that regard. Like we had a man on our program last month who's promoting, he's an immigrant to the United States, and he's promoting all the United States companies that manufacture here. So if you want to buy American, you can buy American. So that's what Kat is doing, is she's promoting local economies, which means if you can't avail yourself of the dinner that she's having, hosting next week, you can create one yourself in your community. So on that line of philanthropy, please join me if you are a female motorcycle rider. I'm the Grand Marshal of the 8th Annual Heels and Wheels Motorcycle Ride, which is this Sunday, July 14th. Go to our website. You can click and you can register. The registration fee went up from $30 to $40 yesterday, and we will remain at $40 through Sunday morning. Registration starts at 8:30, kickstands up at 10. The ride is always very scenic, beautiful. We go inland through orchards, and then we go to the coast, so you get to see the Pacific Ocean, and then we end at lunch. So the $40 registration fee includes a t-shirt for the annual event, which is always very creative, and it says "Fight Like a Girl" on it. Lunch, the ride, and $10 of your registration fee goes to the Breast Center at Community Memorial Hospital that serves underprivileged, disadvantaged, uninsured, underinsured women in the community. So it's women raising awareness and women raising funds for the Breast Center at Community Memorial Hospital. And in the past 3 years that they've been the recipient of this event, they've received over $20,000. So that's not insignificant. So that's another cause. So please join us for that. And you don't have to be a Harley rider. Ventura Harley Davidson is sponsoring this, but it's all rides, all just, but it's all women. And as my brother, who is a Harley rider, he said, "Hey, Murr," that's what my siblings call me, Murr. "Can I support you and join you in the ride?" And I was like, "No, it's all women." He goes, "I'm going to take an issue with that." And then he says, "How about, can I go in the back?" It's like, "No." By the way, they did say too that if you don't ride a motorcycle, you can drive your car and be a part of the rally. So if you'd like to help out a cause and you're female and you'd like to ride, please join us too. So again, it's on, the registration is on MariaSanchezShow.com. So seeking redemption after the prostitution scandal and his political career was dumped, former New York Governor Eliot Spitzer is looking to return to the political arena, and he is running for comptroller of New York City. So he's gambling on forgiveness and our fleeting memories, of which politicians seem to get, among them, of course, former South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford, who won the U.S. House seat in May, and former U.S. Representative Anthony Weiner, who jumped into the race for New York mayor. So Spitzer, a Democrat, resigned in 2008 after revelations that he had spent thousands of dollars on prostitutes. He has worked as a commentator for various news outlets, including CNN. And he says, last night he said, "I recognize the flaws that led to 2008. And he's looking for forgiveness and for a second chance. And he is still married. So two surveys of New York City voters released in late last month indicate that Anthony Weiner is basically tied in the battle for the Democratic mayoral nomination. And as we mentioned, Mark Sanford, former South Carolina governor, won the U.S. House seat in May. So in order to qualify for the primary ballot in September, Spitzer has to collect at least 3,750 signatures from registered voters by Thursday. He told the New York Times that about 100 signature gatherers will begin that task starting this morning. And in interesting news in real estate, Chinese buyers accounted for 18% of what foreigners spent on homes during the 12 months that ended March 31st. This released today by the National Association of Realtors. Chinese are also buying more expensive homes than other foreign buyers, and nearly 70% of those Chinese deals were 100% in cash. Chinese buyers feel strongly that California is a good market, so more than half of their homes sold to foreign buyers went to Chinese nationals in the state of California. And of course, Chinese gross domestic product has grown by high single digits, sometimes double digit rates for the past 10 years, giving them a lot of cash, and they view United States real estate as a safe and stable investment. Many of the Chinese clients work in technology, and they're also buying homes for their kids. So they're buying homes many of them, well, here's a staggering statistic, I think many, I would say the majority, they're, the United States government, we have a plan called EB-5, Immigrant Investor Program, and that's, they consider a fast-track way to get a green card. I met a couple from France that did that. They invested in a company in San Diego area. What you have to do, you have to invest at least $500,000 in a business that provides or preserves 10 jobs. And so nearly 80% of all EB-5 visas went to Chinese nationals in 2012. So four states accounted for 58% of all foreign sales. Florida had 23%. California, 17%, and Arizona and Texas, 9%. So now we're going to get Kat Merrick on the line, and she's going to tell us about a dinner that she's got planned on July 17th and what it means to the community. Kat, good morning. It's Maria Sanchez. You're live and on the air. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you for joining us this morning. And again, we wanted to visit with you. I call you an activist in the best sense of the term. Would you agree with that description?
Yeah, I'll wear that badge proudly.
Good. So tell us about your parent organization and then specifically about the dinner next week, please.
So Totally Local VC, we call it a Live Local program, and what we do is we work hard to encourage our local community to shift their spending to local. We ask for 10%. Luckily, we find when people start doing it, they usually shift about 60 to 70%. It becomes something that they actively remember in their brain, and they tend to do it. What we do is we work hard. We say we educate. We spend a lot of time on our online site at totallylocalvc.com, our Facebook pages and all our other social media pages, trying to educate the community on all the importance of living local. We do some advocacy work with our cities, and then we also do what we say is celebrate. So, living it, showing people through events that we put on, like the dinner series, of how easy it is to meet our farmers, meet our local wine and beer makers, meet the local chefs, and how easy it is to really eat, live local, and buy local.
And the other reason that I like promoting you is that even if folks aren't local here in Southern California, that means that they can still do local in their communities wherever they may be.
Exactly.
It's a universal message.
Exactly. And even if you don't live in, people will say, well, I don't live in an area, say you're in New York City. Let's just take a big city. And they'll say, well, I don't live near farming. Well, you do, because within 100 miles there are farms and things that will bring them in. They have farmers markets. Go and meet them. And we try to tell people, do local first, which is 100 to 150 miles from your home. That's a farmers market standard. And that also applies to businesses, your local, small, independently owned businesses in your community. And then we tell people do regional second, and then look at state, what's made in our country, U.S. made. And if you're able to do that, you're living local, and you're helping your communities.
And it's not just about food, like you said. It's about products, too.
Exactly. So say I live somewhere where I think it's not a big ag-type community, where you're able to get that kind of like we have here, we're blessed with that, you're able to still live local. I mean, your chefs are sourcing. Talk to chefs when you go into a restaurant to eat. When you walk into your local small businesses, it's great because you know they're locally owned independent businesses. You're supporting them, but you can also ask them, how local are they and what products are they carrying within their stores that are local?
Now,
a lot of them are identifying it now because it's a big trend, so mm-hmm. That's good.
Tell me what the big box stores do to your cause.
Well, big box stores, and it's proven, they come into each community and they'll price gouge. I mean, what they do is they lower their prices to initially get you in there, and then you kind of get your sticker blindness where you don't pay attention anymore, and they jack them up. The price goes back up. So basically what people do is they think they're getting a deal. What the big guys are doing is basically undercutting the small businesses, which drives them out. Once they're driven out, then the prices go back up.
And is there a balance that can be maintained between having a big box and having a local community, or are they mutually exclusive? It's one or the other.
No, I don't think that they are. I mean, I wish they were. I wish we only had local independent businesses, but, you know, it's not the reality. And we try to be very realistic. That's why we ask for 10%. We can't get everything locally. We just can't. No matter where we live, it's not possible. So what we ask people to do is look for the things where you can make the difference, where you can shift, and then where you can't, you know, go. And we also understand everyone has a budget that they have to live within. So find the things, again, where you can make a difference, where you can shift, where you can support. Most locally owned small businesses are not more expensive. That's a myth. You go in and you check those prices, and you usually will find a good deal from them. And if you show them a price from one of the competitors, especially a big box, a lot of times they'll try to match it because they don't want to lose your business.
So in terms of your dinner, this is a series that you do. How long have you been doing the series?
We're going into our third year. So it's been fantastic. We do three dinners a year. They're set in iconic locations. All of them emphasize it's a farm-to-plate meal, one long table. We call it a king's table. Everyone sits together, communal style. It's family served, family dining. So what that means is we come out with huge platters. Everyone serves each other. It's all local. All our ingredients, our chefs, we highlight our chefs, our winemakers, our farmers. We take our farmers around to each of the tables, and we get to talk about what's in their ingredients that each of them grew or raised. Sometimes it's cattle, and some, you know, you never know what it's going to be. And it's really nice. It's really interactive, and you don't even realize you're getting that education because you're tasting, eating, smelling, hearing it all, and it's just an amazing evening, and we try to make it as magical as possible.
And this particular dinner is on Wednesday, July 17th?
It's Thursday, July
Thursday.
18th. Okay. We always do our dinners on a Thursday. For some reason, people tend to have that Thursday nights open, so we've always had our dinners on a Thursday. It's the 100th year anniversary of Ventura's City Hall. And not only that, the fact that, you know, it's 100 years for the City Hall building, it's a historic landmark, the building is. In 1911, the LA Times reported it as it being a design which was one of the most imposing public structures in California. That's a big statement. Albert C. Martin designed it. He's a world-renowned architect. He did Grauman's Chinese Theater, the LA Courthouse, a lot of other areas as well, and other buildings. And it's a cute story. He fell in love with one of the city councilman's daughter, came up here, was trying to court her, offered to design it for free. Of course, they couldn't allow him to do that legally, so he said, well, pay me this little pittance, you know, and I'll do it. And they were like, wow. So he, this world-renowned architect, designs it and builds the city hall, and he didn't get the girl, but he did take his money that they paid him and bought Tiffany skylights that sit in the courtroom now up there.
Really?
He donated it. Yeah. Gorgeous.
How philanthropic of it, even when his amorous pursuits didn't end up looking for.
Well, you know, and it's amazing when you walk through it. It's all marble flooring and this majestic, like, staircase that you come down in the main entryway with views right down California Street to the ocean. You go in the main courtroom, because it used to be the courthouse. Originally it was the courthouse. Now it's our city hall. When you go in there, it's all mahogany wood, and every window when you open it's a view, and it's just unbelievable building in itself, just sitting there up on the hill. It's just an absolute stunning.
Now, so, do you share who the farms are and who the chefs are and what the meal is?
Yes, we will. We usually don't, but we will because it's you. It's really great because one of the reasons we wanted to highlight, so I'll just throw this in, why we wanted to highlight Ventura City Hall in the 100th year is that farming built that building. It was the dollars because it was the largest business in the area. It still is. Farming employs the most in our area, so that's kind of pretty amazing in itself in this day and age. So we wanted to highlight the 100th year and the fact that farming helped build that building. Our chefs are, this one is Chef Tim Kilcoyne. He's fantastic, and he's known for sourcing locally. He's one of the leaders in it in the area. Four Bricks Winery, Surf Brewery, Beacon Coffee, which is roasted locally. Our farmers are McGrath Family Farms out of Camarillo, Dave Palmer, Santa Paula, We've got Riogozo Farms out of Ojai, California, Tamai out of Oxnard, Deerdorf Family Farms, again, Oxnard fourth generation farmers. It's pretty amazing. I call it like, you know, the A-list of farmers that come to the table. So.
Now, how do you amass so many? And does each one provide a dish? How does that work?
No, what we do is our chef starts working with them to see what they're going to have. I mean, it's literally picked like a day to 2 days prior to the dinner. That's how fresh it is. So we're basically on the phone talking to them, texting, you know, are you going to have this? Is that going to be right? And what the chef does is we can kind of guesstimate what's going to be coming up. And we look at what we're going to have, and we maybe know that Phil McGrath, his tomatoes are just absolutely stunning. So Phil will say, well, I've got the tomatoes here. You know, Riogozo may say, which he just had for the last one, these amazing carrots. So we look at what they've got. Chef creates a menu out of what he knows is in season and basically what all the ingredients that are available are. And it tends to just work out. It's a five-course meal, so there's a lot of ways to fit them in there. Well, when you first arrive, you're served appetizers. We do about 3 to 4 different types of appetizers. Then you go down and sit and have dinner, and you've got a five-course meal. So there's a lot of ways for our farmers to be able to be highlighted on each plate.
And then do you have pairings? Is that where you bring in the wine and the beer?
The wine is paired with each course. So that's wonderful. We work really closely. Our chef does really closely with our winemaker, again, Four Bricks Winery. And also, you know, Surf Brewery shows up, and he usually looks at the menu and tries to bring something that's going to fit well for those that don't want to drink wine. You know, and we've got lavender lemonade we always make for those that don't want to drink so they can have it, and it's made out of local lemons and lavenders, and so it's pretty
and,
cool.
And the cost?
It's $135 per person, and what's funny is sometimes people say $135, and we tell them, well, what you're going to get is a tasting at the beginning, wine, beer, and limoncello tasting, appetizers. You're taken on a tour where people normally don't get to go. You're learning some of the history. There's local music being a musician there playing. A five-course meal. There's no tipping, and you actually did tip because spending that money now it goes to Future Farmers of America and the Steve Tobe Culinary Scholarship Fund for Ventura County High School students.
So
not too bad.
No, and do people write their checks to your organization or to those that are the beneficiary?
Yes, to Totally Local VC. They write it to Totally Local VC. One of the things I want to stress is that what we believe is a good matrix for success in business is not to ask everybody to donate. So our chef gets paid. Our winemakers, they get paid on their bottles. Now, they give us a great price on all of that to be able to pull this off, mm-hmm. but we're able to do it and also give a little back so nobody's having to dig in their pocket. So mm-hmm. the check's written to us, we pay out what we have to pay, and then we divide up what's remaining and give it to our charities. So,
and then do you make an accounting, Kat, as to what you've given over time and to which organizations?
Yes, we do. And you know what? I don't have that number in front of me, but I did it at the end of last year of how many people we fed, how much we gave, how many people total sat at our table, and it kind of blew me away that when we sat down and really figured out as a whole how much we were able to do. So it makes you feel really good at the end of the day because you think
we've
highlighted our area, we've highlighted all these great local businesses and our farming community, and we just gave back. So that's pretty makes you feel good.
I'm wondering if we can get you on this side of the grade.
Yes, the goal is to
okay.
do it countywide. We
All right.
have done some up in, you know, we've been in Santa Paula. We just got an invite from a 6,000-acre ranch out in Piru to come out and do one there. Santa Barbara's pulling at our tails, asking us if we'll come up that way and do one. And we are looking at some places up by you in Westlake area. Our goal is to continually have this at different locations throughout the county and get that following built so that people can come and just see everything that we have. We have such a bounty.
Excellent. That I always feel like I'm a better off after having a conversation with you. Really.
Well, thank you. That's a very nice compliment.
Well, because you embody exactly what I believe, which is one voice, one vote, one paycheck. What we do, yeah. how we spend our money matters. It makes yeah. a difference. And so many people think, oh, I'm just one of many, or, you know, I'm just a little ripple in the the pond. And it's like, no, you're doing it. So I can't thank you enough, Kat.
You are. And just to throw a little note on that is that some of our servers are volunteers. They're students from the culinary program, the Ventura County Culinary Program, the RP. And I spoke to those kids. They asked me to speak on local and eating local because they're in culinary. And I explained to them, I go, even if you say you're in your tight budget that you spend $30 a month as a student, don't go to the fast food restaurant. You can find a local place doing a sandwich or the pizza or whatever you want to eat. And that equates to you're helping your community. And I explained how that helped them. And it was wonderful to see the expression on these kids' faces to know that they can make a difference too, that every single dollar we spend counts.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll post the podcast and your contact information later on today. So thank you for
Maria.
Being such an inspiration. Kat Merrick.
Oh, your support is so appreciated. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. TotallyLocalVC.com. And again, the dinner is Thursday, July 18th. We'll put that on our website. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I hope you have a great day. Look forward to visiting with you tomorrow. You're listening to The Maria Sanchez Show.
Talking, so call Maria, her show is killing.